Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking about some serious, as we were talking about earlier, paradigm shifts. And one of them has to do with our internet. Now, you know how it is right now. Everyone's got their own internet provider, and there are battles between all the companies to give you internet, from the cell phone companies to Cruise.io or...
It seems like everybody wants to charge you for something on the internet.
Yeah.
Everybody's trying to make a buck, and who knows? Who knows how much of it do you really need? How much of it is totally overlapping and redundant? But it really comes from the fact that everybody needs an income, so everybody's trying to sell you something.
That's right.
Okay, but tell us about the internet. What are you guys
What I was going to say is that there's a new kid on the block. Well, it's not that new a kid. He's Elon Musk. We all know Elon.
I'm in the Elon fan club.
She's in the Elon, for sure.
Yeah.
He's got a plan to give us all internet without having to go through local area providers and deal with the whole mishigas of cell phone companies and landlines and
ISP
providers.
As I recall, his last big rocket launch failure was when he was trying to launch some internet satellites for Facebook, and that went down. That didn't happen. But now he's launching some more?
Yeah, there's some more going out, and that this is a new network. Two of them are being launched this weekend.
Two satellites.
It's part of a network that ultimately requires about 4,000 satellites. 4,000 satellites in low Earth orbit. 4,000 satellites would give the entire planet complete high bandwidth connectivity.
Wow, that's quite a fleet of drones.
Go directly to go. No more dealing with local providers. No more dealing with regulatory agencies other than...
What? Chaos in the airwaves? Back to the early days of the internet when anybody could talk to anybody without a priest in the middle to charge the money? No toll roads?
Well, I guess there's Elon. He'd probably charge you for this.
Will he? Well, he might make it very reasonable, though. No, yeah. He'll charge it through the nose, but, you know,
well, hopefully,
it'll be worth it.
Well, hopefully not. You know, hopefully it'll be so ubiquitous and so cheap that it will cost a fortune. But
PayPal started out as free. Now they're trying to charge somebody. But that's the bottom line. When you have a world that runs by money, then eventually, if it's at all powerful, money is involved.
So 800 satellites through the USA alone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe we'll throw in Canada.
Mm-hmm. What?
Well, for the same price.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Yes.
So 800 satellites it takes in low Earth orbit, about 180 miles up.
Ubiquitous communication everywhere
in the United States, yeah.
So that's up and down.
Yeah, and 4,000 for the planet, for the entire planet.
Okay, that's great.
And with the Falcon Heavy, you should be able to launch 50 or 60 at a time.
Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time until there's 4,000 of them up there.
Yeah. Then they communicate with each other by laser transponders. They're all connected at the speed of light with each other to form a mesh network. And they're connected to the internet.
Hmm. Okay. Well, they make the internet. One thing I think we've forgotten is
the sourcing part of the internet.
I just want to put this thought form out there that people forget, because people think the internet is kind of like this big machine. They don't realize that every single person who turns on their computer and has a hard drive that is asking a question or receiving information is part of the internet. The internet is the ultimate one-to-many thing. It's one thing that is made of all of the individual things that are touching it.
Yeah, the decentralized intelligence model of the universe.
But each laptop is a drop in the cloud.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we've kind of lost that sense of it. It used to be that the internet was for all of us, and now we sort of act like the internet is being provided for us by these people far away who know more about it than we do and should charge us money. But actually,
I don't.
The computer that you're using is part of the internet. If you were running a server off of that, you would actually be extending the internet, because you could answer questions from everybody else.
Yes.
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 Anyway, the power is within our hands. I just don't want to forget that.
Yes.
Even if...
No. I won't
it
forget,
becomes
Mrs.
more and more populated.
I promise.
People try and make it easier for individuals who haven't got involved yet.
Yes.
It's still a one-to-many thing.
Yes.
Why does that seem so important to me? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're emphatic about it anyway. Okay, let's go on to the next story.
Please.
Okay. Okay.
Ready to go where you want to go.
Okay, no, honey. Not that the last story isn't important. Because it is, because it's ubiquitous internet is going to change everything. It's like having a central nervous system. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes a difference. Magic Leap, another piece to this puzzle. They're taking on funding from a new company called Axel Springer. Just wanted to mention that. They're getting more money. This is a company that promises to have the best magic glasses imaginable.
Right. And I just want to describe to people what you see when you use a Magic Leap. Magic Leap is that VR gear that has a lot of mystery around it, but the things you see in it are augmented reality. So you can see through your Magic Leap VR AR glasses a elephant standing behind you in the room. That's the kind of thing that Magic Leap gives you.
Imagine the visual mathematics you can do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can see anything the computer can generate in real time in synchrony with real world events. In other words, it superimposes computer world stuff onto normal reality.
So it's kind of holodeck tech.
Yeah, you wear these and you literally have an overlay of whatever's going on the net.
Right. Some little virtual object in the computer screen is appearing in the reality.
Yeah, real Matrix stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For real.
Mm-hmm. So, but you can only see it through the gear, obviously.
Now,
it's not in reality.
These guys are masters of marketing. They've been able to get a couple of $1 billion already.
1.9 to be precise.
Yeah. And they continue to bring in more money. They had their Series D financing round in October, taking on a $502 million from a Singapore-based finance firm. Mm-hmm. So they've got all Hollywood into them, all the interest and money in Hollywood, now Singapore. Everyone's hoping they can deliver.
But the article that you presented to us today is about a German media company.
Yeah, German media company. Because now they're starting to see, well, okay, now once everyone's wearing glasses, what are they going to look at? What's going to be really the killer apps with augmented reality?
Perhaps we need a virtual newspaper.
Perhaps. And what classically happens is that we take whatever was popular in the last iteration of technology, like newspapers, and put them into the next iteration of technology, which may or may not actually apply.
Mm.
We'll find out if newspapers really fly in augmented reality.
In VR, if you go by Snow Crash, then probably what you're going to have is the old town crier. Instead of reading a piece of paper that's in VR, you're going to have an avatar that is going to tell you the headlines. So imagine that Siri or Alexa or Iris or Watson gets a voice, gets a body, and then asks you what news you're interested in, and then tells you what you want to hear. That's what I'm imagining.
Yeah, that probably goes through that iteration for sure. Then when we get that really good with the MRI technologies, the portable stuff that we can wear, then we'll be able to just know the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to have anybody read them to us. We'll just know them.
I see. Eliminate the middleman.
Yes.
No need to go through the oral or aural context.
That, well, all the interpretive processors of the human system. Well, just go past that. Go right to know.
Uh-huh.
To me, that's the natural direction we're heading in with
okay,
all this.
Okay, you just want it imprinted directly on your brain upon demand.
I just want to know all the options right now.
Stop using
that's
your
all.
Senses.
I don't want to have to read a 2-page description.
Right, right. You want to get the entire university course in one little snap of the fingers.
Yeah. What do you settle for?
Hey, I believe in superhuman powers. I believe the future will give us more than we have imagined so far. So,
let's
you're probably onto something.
Anyway, so let's go back to this.
No, we have to go forward too.
Back forward. Okay, Magic Leap leaps forward to more funding from Axel Springer and watch what they come up with for content. That should be really interesting.
Okay, we'll be back after this content. A little bit of headline news, a little bit of local messages from thriving businesses who love our show and this radio station, KSEO. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Now, another interesting meme to pass on comes from the Google X co-founder, Sebastian Thurn. A lot of people have been worried about losing jobs over the whole AI thing. However, AI is coming in and replacing human workers. We've all heard this ad nauseum everywhere at this point.
Sure, well, right? Repetitive, boring, dull jobs. People still need that paycheck. They might not like the job, but they sure like the paycheck.
All right. And the way it's been portrayed in a lot of the media is that artificial intelligence and the human workforce are at odds. People are concerned that
burger
machines,
flippers are competing with robotized burger flippers.
No, beyond that, I mean, they've been tied. There are stories out there about AIs taking the jobs of white collar workers, now professionals, the new.
Oh, sure. Look at TurboTax. I wonder if the accountants of the world are worried about TurboTax.
Well, if they start getting fewer clients, you'll start to be worried.
Yeah. I think there's still a role for knowledgeable people to steer you in the right direction.
But Thurn thinks that, at least from his vantage point of operating Google's secret X labs, which counts for something, I guess.
He's probably seen some unusual things that we haven't seen.
Yes, he thinks that AIs will make humans into superhuman workers. We'll be able to work harder and better. Doing more.
How do you put that on a resume?
Yeah. I'm a superhuman worker.
Yes, and we'll be able to do more. Well, it's true today.
No job. I cannot prevail.
From driving buggies to driving cabs. Hey.
Hey, now you're talking.
Yeah.
Successful
I'm faster,
evolution.
I'm more superhuman. I can do more fares per day than I could back then.
Yeah, you can't jog as far.
I don't have to clean up after a horse. it's definitely improved. So superhuman workers, that's his approach. He said AI is a tool, what AI can do really, really well. Mm-hmm. And what does AI do that's really, really good? And what they're good right now is that they're good at repetitive work.
Right.
You do that's repetitive, you repeat over and over and over again. Lawyers with all those forms, claim insurance, doctors even. Everything's a form these days. What if the AI just did all that and freed you up to be more creative and explore new stuff?
I think this has already happened. I was taking a walk the other day in the woods, and I was noticing all of the plants, and I was thinking that I would like to know the name of many more of the plants than I had known before.
There's an app for that.
Exactly. Yeah. I was able to look up that information. But it occurred to me that there is so much in nature that has never been named. There is so much in the visual sphere that has never been described to a computer in a list. So the fact that computers are so good at keeping so much information in a list, retrievable in some form, if you can just come up with a way of telling the computer what you want to know, gives us bigger vocabularies than we've ever had before. We have much more access to information than we did in the past.
That's right. And the crux of the biscuit is that jobs will never go away. Very repetitive work will be done by the AIs. And what will we do? We'll be creative beings. We'll creative work. So we'll move from repetitive working society into a creative society where we invent new things.
That's right. Not expecting AIs to invent things. We're expecting them to remember things.
Yeah, there's an example of this in the new Netflix series, Altered Carbon. It's a futuristic sci-fi flick, and where a hotel's only employee is an AI manager that looks and talks like Edgar Allan Poe.
There you go. So future jobs are the humans who make that AI
make those fun environments
look like and sound like Edgar Allan Poe. Yeah. That's what the humans are going to do, is make those artistic renditions.
Yeah, they'll enhance our experience.
Let's say hi to a caller.
Yes.
You ready?
Sure.
Troy and Felton.
Hey, Troy.
You're live. Welcome to the show.
What's up in your world?
Hey, greetings, my friends. What's up in my world? Today is my 60th birthday.
Hey,
wow. Congratulations.
Wow. Oh, no, it feels so horrible. But I just want to say that I went to Los Gatos this morning to DMV and got there at 6:30, and I got my driver's license renewed in about a half an hour. What they called about is your guest. He's a UCSC professor.
Right. Yes, Abrams.
So, yes. So here's the deal. Michael Zwerling, Michael Olson, and Charlie Friedman, they all went to school there when this guy was teaching.
Yeah, we just introduced Charlie to him on his on the way out.
These guys all know each other.
Had a chance to introduce the two of them.
Mm-hmm. They're and, Santa Cruz contemporaries.
Yeah, Charlie said. Yeah, 74.
When it was a small town.
Yeah.
In fact, Ralph told us that Michael's father was his optometrist.
No way, I missed that. Oh, my gosh.
That's not even, on the show. He told us that privately.
Yeah. That's like a conspiracy theory almost. That means, but you know what? God bless his heart.
Yeah.
Ibrahim, Mr. Ibrahim, another fine Greek name. But you know what? Anyway, I just want to say that this guy, he was tenured in there, and this guy has been retired for how many years living in Santa Cruz?
I think he still teaches.
He just recently retired. He's 82, born in 36.
Yeah.
So 82, I think, yeah. And he just, this year, this is his first year off. And
yeah.
50 years of teaching.
Wow.
He's spending his retirement editing books about Santa Cruz hip culture.
But you know what? He's influenced a lot of young minds here in Santa Cruz. And I don't know which way that's going, but you know what? I'm down. I'm against marijuana. And I've done it, and I haven't done LSD, but it's just like a brain inhibitor. I think all our youth should be on, like, estrogen and testosterone and keeping the race going. And his stuff, I think that's a degeneration. Well, that's not the right term.
That's a beautiful thought. I think that you're conflating a few things that I would, as a woman, keep in slightly different categories. Because I think it's very important that humans keep the human race going. And I think that we do that in a lot of ways. One of them is by making life worth living and exploring our natural human potential. And
Oh my gosh, Dr. Future, watch out for her tomorrow. Tomorrow is Valentine's Day. She wants something. Hey, I can feel it coming.
That's right. I'm taking
thanks for taking my call, guys.
Okay.
You're welcome, Troy. Always glad to hear from you.
Yeah, we're going to go to What is Erotic tomorrow.
Yeah, right. We're going to have a lot of fun. So of course, we do all the time anyway. That's the thing of true love.
Well, what's great about Santa Cruz is there's so many fun things to do if we do want to go out.
Yeah, really. I love living in this beautiful, creative community.
Yeah. So to complete on this article on futurism, in futurism on the idea that we'll be able to do more with the AIs rather than them taking over makes a lot of sense to me. It's kind of like the multiplicity theory.
They're going to do the boring stuff we don't want to do anyway, and we're going to do the creative stuff that only we can do.
So don't worry. You'll be a superhuman worker. You won't be a superhuman lord. You'll be a worker still, but you'll be a superhuman one.
Mm. Well, as long as it just keeps getting better.
Okay.
The path of evolution should be lifting the tide for us all.
Where worker evolution is guaranteed. As long as you want.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. There's so much to say about the idea of worker.
You caught that. Okay.
I did.
All right. Well, that's the thing. The roles in an industrial culture require that we have workers.
And I think people should take pride in their work.
But now
we're
post-industrial, and working is a attribute, a trait, and something that we're proud of as Americans and as a culture.
What makes it intolerable?
I think the
is
robots,
when
though,
your
do
relationships
certain,
don't appreciate and honor your human efforts.
Yes.
Then when they cause you to diminish who you are.
But you should only work ultimately at what you're good at and what you love to do. That's the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
We can use the machines to move in that direction. Yeah, what advances you, at least consciously. I mean, we always have chutes and ladders, right? We always have pitfalls and things that happen that we wouldn't choose, but we learn lessons there that improve things anyway.
Well, and to get good at things that are hard, you have to start with things that are simple. And you have to have a lot of humility when you're beginning something because you don't always start off being smart. You have to develop skills by trying things on that you haven't tried before. And I think work should be something that develops human potential.
Ideally.
Yeah.
In school, we did a work study. You ever do that? Remember the work study programs?
Sure.
They were big in the
70s. I had some internships when I was in school.
Yeah. That way you're actually out in the real world and it's not just academic knowledge that you're getting about stuff. And you're getting real world experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's as valid today as ever.
Sure.
Especially as we go into these new realms of virtual worlds. Okay, well, let's look at that Kitt Peak thing. It looks like it's getting a major overhaul, and dark energy is responsible for it. And I really want to look at this. You know, I can
think
see
about
how,
that.
Once again, dark energy is getting blamed for a serious thing, and I want to share that with you.
Okay. How's that for a cliffhanger before we go to the break? We'll be right back. Dr. Future Show.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of the Dr. Future Show.
Did you say something about dark energy?
Dark energy, yes. The real news context is that we have a telescope. It's called the Mayall Telescope at the top of Kitt's Peak or Kitt Peak in Arizona.
A little bit south of Tucson.
Yeah. And it's getting a serious upgrade to be able to search for dark energy. That's the whole story there. So we're actually looking for dark energy. We're trying to figure it out. We're trying to look at it. And then the new upgrade will allow us to map the sky and look at a 3D map of where the dark energy is.
It's sort of counterintuitive that the way we're going to map the dark energy is by looking at spectral data, which is actually light.
Well, maybe Ralph Abraham might have a better visual for us, but I think that's what we know. 3D graphics, animated graphics.
How about if you look at the dark energy and I'll look at the light, which is the actual data coming in?
Well, there's that, too. I mean, it's a system. You can't have dark without light.
Okay. You know, you have a point. But leave it to you to say that what we're studying is dark and what actually is coming in is light.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to look at what's not here.
There's something in the yin yang about this. This sounds like a metaphor for all that is. Right. So, okay. Light.
Well, keep an eye open for that. That we should have some nice pictures when they do this.
Well, tell us more. I think this is really cutting edge news. This telescope is giving us a whole new way of looking at space that I think is very exciting. There are two mirror telescopes currently at Kitt's Peak. And one of them is being retired. The big one is being kept. Mm-hmm. And one of them is being retired. And it's being replaced with 5,000 fiber optic cameras. So there's 5,000 little strands of glass. And each one is a camera that's looking up at the sky. And every 20 minutes, it is going to record a reading of light and send that little tiny bit of data to a computer that will compose a new map of the universe.
Incredible.
Yeah, incredible. It is incredible. It's going to be the most granular, accurate data of the universe that has previously existed. It's going to give us a whole new view of the actual shape of the universe. We're going to be able to see a lot more information about how the universe formed,
the expansion,
and the history,
especially
and
the
how
expansion.
It expanded yeah. over time.
This piece from Tucson.com says, it was thought that because the universe began as a result of the Big Bang, that after a while, gravity would contract all matter in the universe into a big crunch. But astronomers were surprised to discover the universe actually expanded at a constant rate for a long time, and then, just a few billion years ago, that expansion began to accelerate.
Right. So instead of the previous agreed upon science, as Ralph Abrams pointed out to us, that scientists are these kind of opinion clubs that
a few billion years
all
ago.
Agree with each other on what the current facts are until a new generation comes along and changes their mind.
Yeah, well, I'm not a total historian on this, but didn't a few billion years ago, isn't that when life, biological life began?
Yeah.
So approximately in that range?
According to the scientists, they've been saying, I think it was about 3.7 billion years ago.
4 billion, I heard.
4 billion.
So I'll see what the answer is.
Rounding up.
So maybe early life start to figure out how to accelerate time. Accelerate the expansion of the universe, anyway.
And the model of the universe, instead of being a big explosion that then collapses back on itself, which was the old model, instead, what it is this steady state of growth.
Living stuff.
Stuff just getting
it was an explosion,
gradually
then it came alive.
Bigger and more complex at a steady rate. And then all of a sudden, going through accelerated growth, exponential growth.
Into what, may I ask? Well, you don't even know what the
all
parts are. Never mind all that is. Yeah, well, it is really where it's so it's
but
expanding.
It means that life started
seems to
out
be,
simple and it got faster and better and more complex.
And it would mean for sure that most of life was in this rapid expansion phase of the universe.
You mean the new variety of life?
Yeah, like biological life.
Yeah, because there was more time spent during the gradual expansion. And then all of a sudden it went into
expansion. What is it? The universe is 13.7 billion years, right? And life began 4 billion years ago. Mm. And the expansion began here a few billion years ago.
Mm. Okay.
So just to put it into a linear time model.
Right.
There.
Yeah. So.
Right. So we're going to be getting more information from the Mayol telescope about the whole dynamic aspect of dark energy in the universe.
Right. New maps of the known universe.
5,000 robotic fingers, the rapidly pointing fiber optic cables at 5,000 pre-programmed galaxies.
Right. And looking at the astrobiology that's revealed through the light.
Yeah, they'll point at a new galaxies every 20 minutes.
You want to say hi to Jim in Aptos?
Sure.
Hi, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Jim.
Hey there.
Hey.
Thank you. I have a quick question for you regarding this magnificent telescope you've been talking about.
The Mayol?
How does it deal with the southern hemisphere? But
well,
they have telescopes
tell you that.
Down there. I
mean, they are in Arizona. They're south of Tucson. They're closer to the equator than we are.
Unless they can see through the Earth, they can only see what they see.
Yeah, they can only look up.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You only get half of the universe.
Well, that's true. They're only going to get the 5,000 galaxies that they can stare at. But they'll get
5,000 galaxies worth of data.
I guess they're well situated between north and south.
Won't be the whole universe, though, but you have a point there. Yeah, that's true.
At least they'll get everything on the east-west plane.
Right. But do they get the Southern Cross?
Well, they're going to need somebody in Chile to handle that, I think. They probably a relationship.
Likely.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where a lot of the other telescopes are.
I can resist that one. So anyway, thank you.
You bet.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, maybe we should just rotate the planet and get the whole thing there for the sake of science.
Well, if they can create it in Arizona, I'm sure that they can deploy it in other places too.
So you can get a guided public tour of the Mayol 4-meter scope. And it will be available while they're putting in this new system.
Yeah, it's going to take them about a year to get this fully deployed.
If you're heading down towards Tucson, it's about 55 miles southwest of Tucson.
Yeah, and they say check the website and make an appointment. Don't just show up.
That's right. It's called the Kitt Peak National Observatory. They have a website. And we have a link on our page at drfutureshow.com/links. The most outrageous thing this week in science news that I've seen is how NASA has unveiled their latest plans about a submarine.
What?
Yeah, I mean, NASA's building a submarine.
They always say if you want to get to space, you have to go through the sea.
Yeah, exactly. They are saying you go through space first, then you get to a sea.
Oh, really? Yeah. They're going to travel through space to get to a sea? That's kind of backwards.
Yeah.
Which sea are they going to?
Well, they're going to Titan. Saturn's largest moon.
Mm.
And NASA's building a submarine that will go down into the lakes and seas of Titan.
Ooh, a submarine for Titan.
And what's really got them excited is that they get to design a submarine not for water, but for methane.
Really?
Yeah.
An ocean full of methane.
Exactly.
Oh, they will not be using combustion engines, I take it.
Well, even electric.
That could be a bad
scene. Well, the good news is it's a robot, so it doesn't need oxygen in its cabin. It doesn't even need a cabin.
Mm-hmm.
So they can design things that travel through methane. I can only begin to guess what that would be.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they're doing.
Wow.
Okay.
That's fascinating. So we're going to send a solar submarine, something that's in our solar system.
It's in our solar system, yeah, but so it's a methane submarine. We have a links on our links page. Click on that, and you'll get to see the submarine that travels through methane lakes and how it works. And
it's a beautiful design.
Yeah. It
really
almost looks like an underwater passenger ship, believe it or not. It was curious.
Mm-hmm.
I would not think that the first one would have any people on it at all. It's going to be completely
especially
robotic.
Especially not going into methane oceans.
Yeah, not
probably
friendly.
Not.
Robots,
no swimming allowed.
Methane, yum, if you're a robot. So I thought that was unusual. Also in the unusual department, they had a feature in Al Arabia. You know, you heard of that? It's an Arab newspaper.
I have never heard of it, but
yeah,
what
it's
did
a
they
site.
Feature?
Well, yeah, usually they usually have a lot of politics in there and leaked Bin Laden secrets and stuff like that. And one of the science articles that got my attention was that they have a place in the desert, in the Oman desert, in the barren desert of Oman, that's a Mars base. I created a little Martian sim, a sci-fi, it looks like a sci-fi movie set.
I see. So yeah. They're practicing for Mars in the Arab desert?
Yeah, I guess they think that
Ormond.
The Middle Eastern deserts are a perfect simulation ground for Mars. And it's
I
a little cold
see that.
For them, I would say.
But, yeah, Mars is probably even colder.
A little chilly for our desert friends. Anyway, they're practicing.
Well, you got to get the hang of it somewhere.
Yeah. And also they're working with the Europeans. There's a group out of Austria. The Austrian Space Forum flight director, he says it's a beautiful place and it's scientifically useful and it's very operationally useful. And as a
well, there you have it, folks.
The
get ready for Mars.
The Oman Desert.
And we're going to do our best to get there between now and next Tuesday. But for now,
you can go to the Oman Desert.
It
feels like you're on Mars. Okay, well, thanks for listening, folks. I hope you enjoyed the show today. It was great to have Ralph Abraham in the studio. Hope you enjoyed hearing what he had to say. And we look forward to seeing you next week.
This is the Dr. Future Show on KSC.
Enjoy that day out there. Sunset should be great.
Santa Cruz.
Wherever
San Jose, Salinas, Monterey, North Bay, San Francisco, wherever you are. Internet.
Montreal.
International.